Hello and welcome to another episode of Comadres y Comics. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
How are you doing, girls?
I'm good.
I'm very good.
Excellent.
But what's the word? Enchiló?
Enchilada?
Me enchiló. I just ate a whole bunch of chili lime peanuts and my mouth is on fire.
It's on fire. Yes.
Other than that, I'm good.
Excellent. Yeah. No, everything's pretty good. Weather's been great. I had my first Facebook Marketplace transaction.
I was wondering where you actually found that from. If it was Marketplace or Craigslist or
like OfferUp or like Yeah. I like to look at all those things. I'm planning vacation to Nicaragua. And so I invested in buying a brand new vest that somebody was trying to get rid of, but they were in Northridge, California, and there's no way I was going to drive down to Northridge, California just to save $20. There was no way. So because we're recording here at the wonderful Starburn Studios, I was able to say, hey, I'm going to be in Burbank on Saturday. Can I pick it up then? And he's like, perfect. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it worked
very
out
convenient
for me. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, because my husband's like, why are you gonna go buy a $20 life vest in freaking Northridge? You might as well get it in Costco here, even though you're gonna pay $40, because it kind of makes sense,
right? Because, yeah, gas.
But and then the traffic and anything, and I'm like, it was serendipitous that we were recording and I was able to get the vest, so I'm very excited. Very excited about that. So how about you guys?
Well, I was just sharing about how I'm super upset. I'm wearing my favorite Thanos t-shirt, and I just noticed that there are two holes under the arms, but not at the seam. So, like, not somewhere where you can just sew it right back, but yeah. It's, like literally, like, an animal came and chewed at my pit and, like, chewed holes through it. And this is my favorite Thanos shirt. It's the shirt from the Thanos series where the second... it was actually issue number 2 where it's Thanos on the side of a hill and he's reaching out to a beautiful butterfly.
I remember,
and it's so amazing, and I love it so much.
I'm sorry, Chris. So- it's a cute shirt for sure. I love it.
Okay,
the art
okay.
is super cool.
I'm very sorry about your shirt, but the music and how like you were reaching out to show how like it was just so on point. I was just all like, oh my god.
Sometimes we wish this was a video instead of audio.
Oh my god.
It was definitely.
So if we're speaking about how we're feeling, I think I need to take a break from video games because. And here, let me tell you.
We laugh maniacally because she's always carrying her Switch.
Yeah, I have my Switch. I was literally playing it a while ago. But I say this because yesterday I was at my friend's house. But on my way to my friend's house, I had left my Switch charger at her house because I had been hanging out the day before. But so I was going to go pick it up. And on my way walking to her, I'm a Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, if anybody
You're
has ever
walking?
Played it. I was walking, yeah.
And playing?
No, I was not, because it was dead.
Because
my charger was at her house.
Okay.
But I had it. But I was walking to her house, and to anybody who has ever played Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, or any Legend of Zelda game that features them, there are these little... tree spirit or like forest spirits called Koroks, that give you stuff and stuff like that. And the way you find them is like you just lift anything in the game, like they're like you climb a tree, sometimes they're up top, you pick up a rock, they're under there, or you like run in the grass and you run into one and stuff like that. It's just a random occurrence. So I was walking to my friend's house and I happened to pass a pile of rocks. And in my head,
oh, wow.
I like this is like there was no hesitation at all. But in my head, I was just like, hey, I should pick up that rock and see if there's a Korok under there. And I was leaning down to pick it up before I stopped myself. And I was just like, wait. Koroks aren't real. I'm not Link. Life is in a video game.
Wow.
So So like after that, I had like a like I had like a moment like while I was there, like it was just like, oh my god, like I had to like pause in my like take a minute to be like, okay, I'm playing too much, I'm playing too many video games, because like for that brief second, I thought Koroks were real. I thought that if I lifted up that rock, there was gonna be a little forest spirit there, and he was gonna give me a seat. no lie, like that's what I thought was gonna happen in my head. That's what I thought was gonna happen. And I was just like, okay, maybe I should stop playing video games for a bit. But that's been my life right
now.
Wow,
that's, you must be really engrossed to have.
Oh, it's a fun game. It's an open world game,
uh-huh,
and stuff like that. And it's very beautifully done. It won Game of the Year when it came out. Mm. And it's just someone aptly put it: Nintendo proved that they can reinvent the wheel for the 9th time, because that's seriously what they did with this game. And it's so much fun. And it's just, but like you get really into it. Like I legit spent a whole day just playing that game.
Wow.
Like a whole day. Like I was just like, I was like, go crazy, go stupid in the wild. That's what I was just like, in the game and stuff like that. So it's just like, it's a lot of fun. But I was just like, I didn't realize I had immersed myself that deeply that I've like 100% thought this game aspect was real.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, let's just go right into it. What time is it, Kristen?
It's hora de la cervecita. So today we are drinking a luxurious beer. It sounds luxurious. Yes. Oh, that was awesome. It is from Einstock. Olger Brewery, which is located just 60 miles south of the Arctic Circle in the fishing port of Akureyri. I don't know how to pronounce that word, but it's literally in Iceland. So we are drinking a beer that is from a brewery that is located in Iceland. There, the water flows from rain and prehistoric glaciers. Prehistoric glaciers.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Down the, this is some Icelandic speaking languages, words here that I am totally going to bungle up. But the rain flows down prehistoric glaciers in the Hildarfjall Mountain. And there's lots of like little squigglies over these letters that I don't know what that
little,
means.
Little dots, little squiggles.
Why can't every language be like Latin-based or something? Holy crap.
Okay, and listen to this. They are flowing down prehistoric glaciers and through ancient lava fields.
Nice.
Delivering the purest water on Earth and the perfect foundation for brewing deliciously refreshing craft ales. It takes the brewery 9 to 12 months to release new styles because they take the time to find the right ingredients and to brew several versions until they get it to the best. They are not a brewery that strives to come out with a new style every week. They just relentlessly focus on quality over quantity. And the results are beers that have won awards all over the world and fans in more than 22 countries. So today, we are going to be trying Icelandic White Ale. And in Iceland, their quest was simple. They wanted to make the best white ale that they ever tasted. They got there with the complex flavors of the classic wit beer, including orange peel and coriander. And it's all brewed with pure Icelandic water and a touch of oats that deliver a cool smoothness that is uniquely flavorful and refreshingly drinkable. This has an ABV of 5.2, and their key ingredients is wheat malt, Pilsner Malt, Olds, Bavarian Noble Hops, Coriander, and Orange Peel. And this is available in cans, bottles, or keg. So even though they're located in Iceland, I actually see this beer a lot around. And okay. I went to a craft beer festival once and they had a booth there.
Oh,
and
that's
the first time I ever tasted it. And so I don't know if I've tasted this one, but I've had some of their beers.
Yeah, and I saw it and I was like, oh, this, I like the art.
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah, like yeah, that, the like art a
Viking.
Of it.
Very Viking, yes. Yeah. Very
straight
cool.
lines, really, really nice. And mm-hmm. I saw it and I was like, as I read the can, I was like, I am really excited to taste this.
So this actually, the page I'm reading is giving us some food pairing.
And I love when they do that. Yeah.
And they're telling us that the crisp citrus and spice notes of the beer are perfect complements to seafood, poultry, vegetarian dishes, Asian food, and spicy food, including Mexican tapas.
Very nice.
Yes. So... they give us some tasting notes, but I won't share that until after we've all tasted.
Excellent. So, cheers, guys.
Cheers. Cheers. Smells very light.
And I love it.
I can smell the orange peel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could taste it. I just tasted it.
I haven't tasted it yet, but it smells really good. And it smells light. And it's a little, for a white ale, it's a little hazy, but not a lot. Like, Allagash White is way more hazy than this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I really love it, let me tell you.
Mm.
Isn't it? And you would think, because it's kind of really clear for me, like, as opposed to hazy and dark, I would think that it didn't have that many notes of flavor, but this one has a lot of notes.
I can definitely taste that wit beer base in there, but it's... And there's a hint of, like, sour, but not an overpowering sour. It's just, like...
Not overwhelming.
No, it's just... It's, like, a hint of it, and then the orange and coriander take over. So the tasting notes that the brewery actually gave was that it's a clean and crisp start with a smooth mouthfeel thanks to the oats, citrus, and spice round... And that the says, thanks to the oats and the citrus and spice round out a refreshing finish.
Well, I love it. I already totally love it. And I would definitely have like a six pack of this for sure. Like all by myself. Like I'd go to a party and I'd take a six pack of this and not share it. You know?
So I am not a fan of very strong, overpowering spices. And the coriander, I don't think I could drink more than just what I'm drinking right here. I don't like it. like, I can taste the orange peel, I can smell it, I can, the whipped beer base, but the coriander is, I think, what is, like, staying on my tongue. And it's not something that I am enjoying very much. So, I don't know if the more I drank, the less that it would be an issue. But yeah, the coriander is a little too much for me.
Okay, so you kept saying coriander, and I was like, what the heck is coriander? So you as know you what were talking, as she was talking, I Googled it.
It's baby cilantro.
It's cilantro. Cilantro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I love cilantro, which is probably why I love this beer.
So look, I love cilantro in my guacamole, in my tacos, in that kind of thing, but not I don't beer. Like it here.
Well, I love it.
Yeah, did you know that there's some people who are genetically dispositioned to not like like cilantro?
Are you serious?
Yeah, there's something genetic that when they taste it, it tastes like it
tastes
horrible,
like soap.
Yeah, or dirt or something in their mouth and they can't eat it.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not one of those people because I love it. I mean, love, love, love it.
My grandmother used to grow it in the alley.
Yeah, we used to grow it too.
And she,
I want to start that again.
Every time she would make salsa, she would go and get some. Or cooking, she would put it in everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, growing up, I always had it, but I just do not like it in my beer.
I love it. I totally love it. I like the smooth finish. You know, the lightness, it's actually doesn't have that much carbonation either. It's perfect for me. I totally dig this beer.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely smooth. And coriander definitely is the aftertaste that gives mm-hmm. it kind of very much an earthy aftertaste. I do like the orange peel. I like it. I wouldn't say it's like my favorite beer ever. Like if I had to choose a white ale or something, I would probably go with Allagash.
Allagash White is my absolute favorite.
You gotta just, say, yeah.
Just mm-hmm. like my absolute mm-hmm. favorite light beer when I'm at like a happy hour and they have it on tap, or even if they have it in the bottle mm-hmm. and I don't want an IPA, that's like my go-to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I like it. I like the orange peel and I like the coriander, but I wouldn't say it's like the best, but it's decent. I like it. I don't mind that earthy aftertaste mm-hmm. as much. But I do like how it smells and I like how I like that smooth finish.
Nice. Well, I think we're ready to rate it.
Well, this is Kristen, and on our scale of flaccid to rigid, which is a 5-point scale, I am giving it an initial, which is a 2 out of 5. If it was the only thing in the entire house to drink, I would definitely not say no to it, but I don't think that I would ask for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think this is a beer that I could actually drink while eating, because I don't like to drink and eat at the same time.
I love to do that.
I know you do. We always have this conversation where I don't, because I feel bloated and I feel like food obstructs the actual taste of the beer. I mean, so this is something I think I could eat while drinking. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm having a burger, I would totally have this in a tall, large glass. What are those pints?
Yeah. Pints is a 16-ounce ones, the regular ones. Then there's the bigger.
I would take a bigger one of these. Yeah. So, yes, I will. I'm going to go full on this.
Oh, you're giving it a 4 out of 5?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to give it a partial mm-hmm. because I like it's not the best white beer I've ever heard. White ale or whatever that I've had, but it was decent.
I'm really disappointed that I don't like it, because I don't know if it's just reading the words glacial water and volcanic fields and all that kind of stuff really made me like want it to be so refreshing and crisp and clean, and the cilantro ruined it. So we have a 2 out of 5, a 4 out of 5, and a 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm. And that has been our beer review. And now it's time for our book review. And today we are actually reviewing two issue number ones, two different books that we actually got at the Latino Comics Expo in Modesto.
Yes. So we have El Peso Hero. How is it supposed to be?
Héroe.
But there's no... that's what... It's
El Peso Hero.
Yeah, it should be El Peso Héroe, but it's El Peso Hero.
Yes.
So, El Peso Hero and Wrath of the Giver. Mm-hmm. And the El Peso Hero was, I remember stopping and talking with him for a while, because he was standing over there by Henry?
Yeah, he was by Henry.
That's what, yeah, by mm-hmm. Hector Rodriguez III is the writer, and it says art by Chema.
Yes, and it was published by Rio Bravo Comics.
Yes, so the little... the little description of the book on the back of El Peso Hero is, the comic is heavily influenced by the modern day challenges people from both sides of the border face. The main story is centered on El Peso Hero, a rogue hero who is standing up against Mexico's cartels and corrupt officials. The results are often destructive and deadly. So that is the description of that one. One of the things that caught my eye of this when we saw it at mm-hmm. the convention was the cover.
Yes.
The cover is so awesome. It's kind of like a throwback to old pulp comics, but it is the title character punching out Donald Trump in the same vein as Captain America punching out Hitler. That was the cover of that so widely shared. And then do we want to just go over that book or just
let's focus on that one right now. So I don't know who Chema is, but I love your art.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, I love it. I love the sepia tone that it has, because they're mostly like in the desert area. This is Sarah, and I'm totally in love with this book. And this is just issue one. Usually people give it 3 issues to see if they're going to keep on following a story or not. But this issue just caught me. It grabbed me.
Mm-hmm. The coloring, I also really enjoyed and liked. I really like the sepia tones and the art of the... of some of the, like, when the artist is trying to portray, like fear and just not having any hope when a lot of these stories are happening out in the desert, like you were saying, and the cartels or whoever were coming after them, and they're thinking that they're going to die. Like, that actually was very... like emotional for me as far as like the art and the way that the artist was portraying some of those.
Yeah. The way they drew it, like with the sepia tones and everything, it feels like you're in the desert.
Oh yeah.
Like it does a good job of doing that. And what I really liked about this book is that it is very much a wish fulfillment.
Yes.
Wish fulfillment in that I wish there was no problems or anything. More in a wish fulfillment in like, I wish this is how I could fix this.
Right.
Kind of thing. Oh, yeah. If superheroes were real, this is the kind of superhero that you wish would exist and would do. Like, you, like, when you hear about those situations, you want to be like, I had this super strength, or I wish I was this brave or this strong and stuff like that. And that is 100% what this is. And I 100% respect that.
Right. Just like how the back of the comic talks about how this book is really focused on modern day challenges that people from both sides of the border face. We see different situations in the book that people are in real life dealing with. So the opening scene is a page of people who are boarding La Bestia, which is the big train that brings exports over to the United States and that never slows down or anything, and people who are wanting to immigrate and use that as transportation have to jump on, and while they're on the train they have to survive, not fall off or not be pushed off, or, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of kinds of horrors that go on actually on the train, let alone trying to get on and off of it.
Yes, it's a train that comes from Central America and goes through Mexico. And usually people from Central America board it, and it does not slow down. And it's cargo, cargo garrajes.
Train cars?
Freight cars.
Freight cars. Yeah. So there's no, it's not like, you know, you hear like soupy where you can go inside and chill. Right. You have to actually go on top. You have nowhere to piss, you have no food, you have no water. Basically what you jumped on with is what you're gonna have during the trip.
Or like in Hanford, when you said that the train passes by and it has to honk or whatever, chime its bell or whatever, and I think they even slow down a little bit.
That doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen. They just go. And how do you know it's there? You hear it. And not with a bell. It's just it's that loud.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. I actually know someone who came to the United States on La Bestia. And there was a movie that had La Bestia, like in part of the movie. And that person went to go see that movie with me. And all I could feel was him squeezing my hand really hard, because he actually had flashbacks.
I can imagine.
So, and that's one of the things I love about this book, is not only does it show the imagery of La Bestia, but it has little short explanation. Right. So it actually teaches you, and you know how much I love comic books that teach you something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the first situation of these immigrants who are on La Bestia, and it talks about how gangs and organized crime groups actually control these routes in the north, and actually that is one of the reasons why it's kind of dangerous, because the migrants are subject to a lot of extortion and violence because at the hands of these people. Mm-hmm. And so that situation is where it's actually two young boys who are on La Bestia. And I would guess, just by looking at them, that maybe like 8 and 12. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like super young, and they're saying that they're going to live with their father in the United States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess the gangs or organized crime groups or whatever stop the train, and they have to try to run. And the one thing that I was, like what Jen was saying, one thing that I really liked about this is it reminded me of the DC Puerto Rico book that we read, where these situations are just like true life horror stories, but this is like a quote unquote wish fulfillment. Like, what if there was somebody out there that could help these people? And what if there was a hero that was out there looking out for them? Mm-hmm. And that's just the first situation, but there's multiple situations in here where every single one of them, I've heard of stories on the news of families who have gone through them, or even personal people I know personally who have gone through a lot of these things in this story.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, all those stories are true. Mm-hmm. Like the kids that are unaccompanied by adults trying to cross the border, people that lose their lives trying to hang on to La Bestia because it doesn't stop. So you fall asleep. All you can possibly do is probably tie yourself so you don't fall. Mm-hmm. But people fall and fall to their deaths.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amputations, all the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also families traveling together, women. Mm-hmm. There are several situations in this first issue that shine a light on those things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even for that, I actually got emotional reading it. And the art is amazing. Mm-hmm. So the way this comic book executes those situations is amazing. I really loved it. And I love the hero. The hero, we don't know what his real name is. Right. All I know is that he's handsome. He's well-mannered. Because he's super well-mannered and he speaks Spanish.
Yes, he speaks Spanish.
I think he only speaks Spanish.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So this book is bilingual. It's a Spanish and an English. So there's that. And also, you get a real sense for the characters as they're braving the elements. You know, the sun, the heat, the violence. I mean, it's just crazy. And not only that, it also shows us a sanctuary city in Texas where some of the background characters are saying, "You're making a mistake. I'm an American citizen." Yeah. But nobody cares.
Yeah.
And how they're like bag 'em and tag 'em, or tag 'em and bag 'em, whatever mentality from the immigration police. And it's emotional while reading it.
Yeah.
Like, if you care for those issues, you're definitely going to feel something while reading this.
Yeah. The in Houston, Texas, the sanctuary city that they talk about, it's a story of a family who is actually facing deportation. Mm-hmm. And the poor girl comes home to find that the apartment complex where they're at is being raided, and her dad tries to tell her to run.
Yeah.
And she gets caught by one of the agents who actually like hits her.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah,
ground. Yeah. It shows an interim deportation camp where they're at, and how they're there, and you know, they're just kind of just now a number, and you know, are telling them don't wear it at all times and don't lose it. And it's just really like that's the only way that they're able to know who they are, or even that she is his daughter. And it was just like visually seeing this, like you hear about it and even on the news they show you some things, but like visually seeing this was very effective.
Oh, they're even giving them the benefit that they're keeping track, because they're not.
Yeah.
They're not even keeping track. The thing about this, though, is that it's wish fulfillment, and that's what I really liked it. But I think that it also suffers from the same thing La Puertorriqueña, the crossover one, did with
DC.
With DC.
Yeah.
In that you're reading it, and you're like, God, I wish that could be that. But at the same time, you know.
But you know it's not.
You know it's not.
Yeah.
And that I think that, I honest to God wish that was real, but you know that it's not real. Mm-hmm. And just knowing that that's not going to happen makes it, I don't know, for me, it ruins it a little bit. And it's just like, so I like the book, but also it's kind of a I wish it could do that. But at the same time, it's just like, it's not real.
Mm-hmm. That was my critique of that DC book too, and that's why I was saying that it reminded me of it in that way. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I was thinking the entire time is, who is this dude? Like, he's just out here doing on this, but I wanted to know more about him. And you actually get a short little snippet after story of his origins. And so I'm hoping that in future episodes, because it does at the end of this issue, he's at the camp and he says, este campo es una injusticia, los voy a liberar. And then it says to be continued.
Yes.
So he's saying, this camp is an injustice and I'm going to liberate them.
Yes. Yeah. So what we know of El Peso Hero is that he's awfully well-mannered. He's handsome. He's strong. He's anti-bullets. And he's focused on helping these people who have chosen to immigrate to the United States, or, you know, like his people. He's trying to rescue his people. And so that's all we know about him. We don't know his real name or anything. But in the last two-page storyline at the back of the book, we see that... It's taking place at the Battle of Torreon. It's September 29th, 1913. Mm-hmm. And it's Pancho Villa and Petra Herrera. Mm-hmm. La Adelita. Now, I don't know. Las guerrilleras, they called them las Adelitas.
Soldaderas.
Soldaderas. And in this little thing, you see that they hand her a medallion, a gold medallion with the PH on it. And that's what he wears as a belt buckle. So I'm thinking his superpowers come from that.
Yeah. And it's and the person who's handing it to her says it's been part of our history. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested to know more about that medallion and who this guy is. Mm-hmm. And it's actually... The last cover page says that there's going to be a hardcover book, volume one, coming out that's going to be over 120 pages, and it's going to contain issues 1 through 4. This is just issue one that we read.
And this is a 5 or 4 issue storyline. I forgot to.
I think it's 4 issues.
I'm guessing just 4, since the volume one is just, it says issues 1 through 4.
I'm ready to buy the book because I need to know what's up.
Yeah, same.
Where can we buy the book?
Well, it says at the back of the page that you can go to riobravocomics.com.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a digital copy, and also you can get the printed trade paperback. So I'm going to totally look into that because I'm really interested in this story. I love the artwork. The artwork was sensational.
Yeah, the artwork was really
the
nice.
The jawlines. I just loved it. It was really great. So are you ready to rate this book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I totally swept off my feet by El Peso Hero. So I'm going to give it 3 conchas y una cup of champurrado.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
This is Jen, and I'm going to give it 2 conchas simply because I think, while I did like the artwork, there were some parts that, like, perspective-wise, seemed a little off to me. And so, it wasn't, like, super major, but it kind of, like, bugged me. It irked me a little bit. And same thing, kind of, like, the same thing with, like, La Boriqueña and stuff like that. The Mac, while I do enjoy the story and everything, and just at the same time, it's just, like, it's not real kind of thing. And so, and that kind of kills the joy for me a little bit. But if, like, somebody wants to read, like, because this can be a very uplifting story. If you want to, like, if, like, believe in, like, superheroes and stuff like that, or what if there was a superhero and that's how you can cope or deal with these things that are happening in real life, this is 100% for you. But personally for me, not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather read something like Puerto Rico Strong.
Yeah.
Than something like La Boriqueña. Like, but that's just my personal preference. Right. So for me, it's 2 conchas.
So this is Kristen, and I'm going to give it 3 conchas because I really enjoyed the story. I really enjoyed the art. And what I really enjoy is the fact that this book offers the opportunity for people to learn about the plight of immigrants, Latino, Latinx immigrants coming over and what they're going through, and to hopefully try to understand. And even if you are already sympathetic with what they're going through, a lot of us have never gone through it, and to actually see visuals of it, I think makes it more real. And he actually talked about how he had some interviews on Telemundo and that the story was really resonating a lot with people, and he was getting a lot of press around it. So for just that fact in and of itself, that's important, I think. And so I'm giving it 3 conchas.
Yep. Nice. So that was our review on El Peso Hero. And now we're ready to discuss The Wrath of the Giver.
So The Wrath of the Giver has a very short description on the back of the book. And it basically says, an ancient object is found, unleashing a fatal curse to anyone who possesses it. And Oy, that kukui. Is it.
Kukui. Yes, this is an amazing book. It is written and drawn by the same fellow.
Yes, Jorge Garza.
Yes, writer and illustrator and conjurer of the story.
So he does, like, some prints and stickers, and he did a special print for Latin Comics Expo. And it was really cool, but it's all like Aztec hieroglyphs style, and it's really, really cool.
Yeah,
and he also does, like, some other styles as well that are very intricate and very detailed. And while we were there, there was a lot of people who were just all like, oh my god, this is so cool. And he does, like, tattoo designs or stuff like that. But that's what a lot of people were saying, is that they wanted a lot of his designs as tattoos and stuff like that.
His table was completely full every time I walked by.
Yeah, and so he actually said that this is his first attempt at a comic. And that he does not mind critiques. So I will happily critique it, but I will say this, I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So, and since I've been given blanket permission to critique it, I will do so, but I will let you guys speak first.
So, and just for everyone's own knowledge, the cover of the book actually has a mature warning on there.
Yes, and it does.
Nothing for nothing else other than, I think, the gore.
The gore. Yeah. Yes. When because I got this from the Latino Comics Expo, and I saw the mask first, and so then I just, like, purchased it immediately. Yeah. And then I read mature readers. I'm like, oh shit, it's gonna have, like, sexual violence or something. Uh-huh. But it doesn't. No. It's gore. Yeah. And yes, I'm into gore. So it starts off in northern Mexico in 1990, and there's 4 illegal men trying to cross the desert, you know, and then one of them spots something that catches his eye. So he finds this corpse, and then something else, something glistening in the sun, and then he finds that it's a mask, and the mask is kind of twinkling, and you get that in the artwork.
And glowing.
And so it
And it looks like there's actually, like hieroglyphs and stuff in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's almost like he can't pull away, and the mask gets closer to his face, and all of a sudden, I'm assuming he gets possessed by the god that is the representation of the mask, and it's a vengeful god.
Is it a god, or is it like an entity more?
I think,
or
it's like a god,
demon or something like that.
Could be.
It could, or like a manifestation of something.
Do we
something.
Get anything? I don't even remember.
No, we don't get anything yet because we just found the mask.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't even know where it comes from. Right. All we know, it's ancient Mexican Aztec stuff. Mm-hmm. And the way we know that it's Aztec, because you might be asking yourselves, how do they know it's Aztec? Is because we get introduced to these kids.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're playing a game that I wish I would have thought of playing when I was a kid. I mean, just in that sense, it was so freaking endearing. So these kids are playing human sacrifice.
Human sacrifice to the Aztec gods.
Yes, I'm here for this.
And I'm not going to lie. Like, the reason I didn't question this at all is because I may or may not have done this with my cousins. And it wasn't like, it wasn't just like, because I read a lot as a kid, so I was the one who came up with games a lot for my cousins and stuff like that. So we would do treasure hunt and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And other times we would play like Greek gods, or like, if not exactly Aztec gods, but something like that. Mm-hmm. And so we're just all like, you know, sacrifice your cousin at the bottom of the stairs. That's now an altar. Yeah. You know, kids can be dark.
Yeah,
there's stuff like that. Or like at school, like you're telling me that you guys have never like played anything like that. Like, let's reenact the Odyssey.
Wow.
Or at least do our best.
That's funny.
Yeah. That is funny.
Anyways, that's how I grew up. Anyways.
He even has like the mushy tomato and to show that they would eat the beating heart.
Yes. That was so, and the cool thing is like when, and this is also in English and Spanish, mm-hmm. and how the dad is like, can you stop using the tomatoes, please?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, stop using the tomatoes or I'll use el cincho. And I'm just like,
yes. I'm here for that too. I live that. Actually.
And in like when he says that, he's like you're not using the tomatoes again. He's like, no, and he throws the tomato that he was using.
Yeah,
yeah.
But the reason these kids know about this this Aztec culture is because the uncle was told by his father that they were descendants of the Aztecs, mm-hmm. and so he was so just captivated by that he started reading all these books, and in his library there's all these books on Aztec mm-hmm. culture, mythology, and everything. Mm-hmm. So the kid, one of the kids, he actually sometimes borrows books, so uh-huh. he learns more about
it. He reads them and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I just really love the dynamic between the dad and the kid, because he's like, you should go to college so you can get a good job and stuff like that. So those are kind of conversations I had in the car as well with like my mom and my dad, you know, mm-hmm. where they're like, what are you going to do with your life? You know, you got to mm-hmm. do this to, you know, because it's basically, if you have a job, mm-hmm. you're set, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I really like that relationship. But throughout this book, we see that the mask takes on different hosts. Mm-hmm. So it's not mm-hmm. just one person that it, you know, it captivates or whatever.
It's not like the mask stays fused onto mm-hmm. one person and stuff like that, and that person is like unkillable and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. No, like once its host dies, mm-hmm. it goes to another person. Yes. And the thing that it does, that it seems to attract people to mm-hmm. it. Like they have this impulse to pick it up, and then it like forces itself onto it.
Yes.
And it's just it's so cool because it's like horror,
mm-hmm. yes.
but it's like it's a kind of horror catered to Latinos in a way that it doesn't sound stupid. Mm-hmm. Because what else would make me put on a mask unless I feel compulsed to do it,
right? Yeah.
So like that was like in the end, even as well, there's a scene where a man is picking it up, or he sees one of the victims that was possessed by the mask, mm-hmm. and how they have marks on their face.
Oh yes, yeah, like hieroglyphs.
And he's just like, oh shit, like I don't want to mess with this because because my like my aunt or like my sister or wife or whatever knows brujería, and this seems to be stuff that's associated with it. But then he sees the mask and he picks it up,
yeah,
because he feels compulsed, to for it. And so he specifically says, like, I was like, I don't want to mess with this, it. But then it's like that compulsion and stuff, mm-hmm. like that. And that's very like. That's very much a very kind of Latin X kind of perspective, in that if you were to see something weird, that's why I can't really enjoy like horror movies like some, because I'm just like, oh, you're going to hear a noise and walk out to see investigate. Bitch, no, I'm staying in the house. Or like when stuff like that happens, you're like, you call up your cousin or your neighbor or stuff like that, and just like, yo, can I hang out at your place or something? Like, some weird shit's going on here, so I'm on my way over, so like, I don't want to be here, kind of thing.
Well,
like, it just seems unrealistic to me.
Right.
And in the same way, kind of how Jordan Peele has done horror, mm-hmm. in a way that appeals to a black audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because he knows.
Right.
He knows what makes them scared and stuff like that. Because he himself is black, so he knows, mm-hmm. how to appeal to that audience, mm-hmm. in the horror genre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what this seems to have that perspective. And I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But I think it's most really definitely. Cool.
I like the fact of the journey that the mask is going on. So it starts off. Yeah. It starts off in Mexico,
yeah.
and then it ends up in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
Southwest U.S. So like, it's not just in one country. I mean, it's just across the border,
right.
and I love the cannibalism that is part of the story. I super duper loved the splash page, the uh-huh. one where the two pages,
yeah.
That was freaking excellent imagery. Mm-hmm. That guy has an awesome imagination. The spread page was
fantastic. Totally. It was amazing. I was telling Kristen that I would 100% buy
yes.
a print of that.
Yes.
Because it's like, it's so
visual.
So visual, so graphic.
Yes.
And it contains so much imagery.
Yes. And it kind of tells its own story within just the imagery.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason we get that splash page is what we're calling it? Or
yeah, that's okay. usually what it's called.
Okay.
That's splash called a splash page.
Because the mask actually latches onto a female. And mm-hmm. as soon as she puts it on, she kind of gets this splash page imagery, so it kind of told her a story as soon as it made contact mm-hmm. with her face,
mm-hmm.
and that was freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy with this book that I want to make fan art. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to make fan art. It's so freaking good. And I actually interviewed him at Latino Comics Expo, so I'll be uploading that pretty soon. So when this episode comes out, I'll immediately put it after, because mm-hmm. he told us a little story about how and why he went ahead and wrote a comic book. So mm-hmm. I'm super in this. I'm excited. Part of it made me smile, like the mm-hmm. kid part, and I love the relationship that the brothers have and their kids. I love that. I love mm-hmm. the whole thing.
Yeah. And I think it was really, I'm actually very surprised for this being like his first like comic and stuff like that, at the pacing he did a very good job pacing it and formatting the panels, uh-huh. because besides I think one page where I was just a little confused as to the reading order, the rest of it was natural.
Mm-hmm.
And so I very much enjoyed that. He knew what he was doing with the pacing.
Oh, absolutely.
With the story and how to progress it and stuff like that. I do feel like he maybe burned through a couple of ideas really quick.
Yes.
That he could maybe go back to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that would be really cool, because there's a lot of potential here.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's really good. One of my critiques of it, though, is that you can kind of tell this is new, is that he kind of doesn't do well with conveying movement. The only time he does it really well is when the mask has possessed this woman and she's atop of a building, and then mm-hmm. she leaps.
Right.
And that was really good. That did a good job of conveying movement and stuff like that. But the rest of it seemed kind of like almost a little stiff, kind of you don't get a sense of movement in the book or from the characters much. They seem to like be still and then they move on to their next pose and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. There's also, he does a very good job with the faces more towards the end of the book, but at the beginning of the book, it was kind of like... They were just a little.
There was definitely a Picasso moment here with this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That face. Yeah, and it almost seems like once you compare it to the later parts of the book, it almost seems like a completely different artist.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of want to know how long it took him to draw this and to do it, because there definitely seems almost a shift in drawing style. Another thing is that maybe, again, towards the end of the book, you get more backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely in the beginning of the book, there is less background. So there's a lot less going on.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems to do very well with towards the end of the book doing backgrounds and stuff like that. So maybe just if he could work on his backgrounds a little bit more, mm-hmm. I think that would add more to the story. And I know backgrounds are a thing that a lot of artists hate doing unless you're a background artist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it would add maybe more movement, more of a kind of city life feel to it, because in the desert it's good. Like, you don't need a lot of background because the desert is kind of empty. But definitely when you're in a city, you kind of want to convey that, that there's like, there's always movement, there's always city life and kind of thing. So that was just like, I think that was most of my critique, is that it the art style itself is kind of a little flat. No, it's very detailed. Like some of the faces can be, once he gets more towards the end, that splash page was amazing.
That was,
but it's like there's almost like a stiffness in pose, unless that was done intentionally. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's most of my critique. His pacing is good. His paneling, his formatting is pretty good. And I actually, it was really funny because I had a moment where you were just flipping through it out, where I remembered thinking is that the woman he's wearing, when there's like a panel of her shoes.
Oh, uh-huh.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they were actually drawn really well. Yeah. And I was just all like.
That's funny that you say that, because when I saw the shoes, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, I'd wear those shoes.
Yeah, that's exactly. I was just like, oh, hey, those are cute. Uh-huh. I would wear those.
Yeah.
So I like those little details and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Did he look them up? Or does he know somebody who has a pair of shoes like that?
Yeah.
And if he does, can he shoot me her number so that I know where to buy these shoes, because they're really cute?
Yeah.
I like that stuff. Like that, I think that's really cool. And but overall, I think this is a pretty strong start to somebody's first comic.
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I want to know more about is the undercover detective who was mauled by his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and it seemed at the beginning that he was kind of an a-hole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we find out he was a detective undercover. So I was like, what?
Which doesn't mean that the two are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Well, no, but I think it was a persona he had made up because he's undercover or whatever. Anyway, I found it to be very delightful. I love the cannibalism. That was one of my favorite parts, I think. So anything else? Are we ready to rate it?
No, yeah, we're ready.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is Sarah. And I know you're like, Sarah likes everything. But I super love this comic. I'm going to give it 3 conchas and a cup of champurrado.
Mm-hmm. This is Jen, and I 100% agree with her. I think this could be a very superb, even more superb book. But I really liked already what we've read.
Yeah.
Besides, like, what it is that I critiqued. I'm going to give it 3 conchas and a cup of champurrado, because I really like that story. Nice. It was really cool.
I'm really interested to see where it goes and finding out more about the Aztec background of the mask and the historical, like, I mean, we see it in that splash page, but like, I want to know more about it. So when a book gets me to think about the many different ways that the story could go, that is, I think, amazing. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it 3 conchas, and I look forward to reading more about the story. And then the epilogue shows one of the characters also dead and the mask just there and the palatero guy.
Oh, I know. It's definitely a cliffhanger, because the kids are involved in that scene. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to ruin it, but
there's an interesting aspect that is brought up about the mask with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That I won't spoil, but it has a lot of potential, a lot of possibilities.
I'm totally at a cliffhanger. I'm like, I can't wait to read what happens next.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that was our review of those books. Those two books, independent books, and you can find, where can you find the Wrath of?
So Wrath of the Giver, you can find him on his website, which is Quetza.com, Quetza.com. His Facebook is Quetzart, Quetzart, but all together, Quetzaart. And he's on Instagram at Quetzart. Quetzaart, Quetzaart, and the comic is available for purchase online at quetza.storeenvy.com. That's Quetza.storeenvy.com.
Excellent. I'm sure you can find those awesome stickers there too.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So that was our review. Thanks, guys. Now it's time for Chisme de la Semana. Kristen, what do you have for us today?
So, my chisme revolves around something that I love, a couple things that I love, but most importantly, Disneyland. And if you haven't already heard, IDW is opening the doors to a Haunted Mansion original graphic novel.
What?
So if those of you who are Disney-philes may remember, there was a Haunted Mansion book that came out a couple of years ago that was a short story that I actually really enjoyed. It was like a limited series, like 4 or 5 issues. It was a really cute storyline. I really loved those Disney books that came out. There was one about the railroad and Haunted Mansion, and there's been...
Figment.
Figment came out. But this one... is really interesting to me because we know the creator, Sina Grace, who is a very amazing independent creator who does his own indie stuff like Self-Obsessed and some other, It's Not My Bag, some other things that you can look up online and see. And he also has a YouTube series that I would highly recommend. But he also does things for Marvel. He was, before he was doing Iceman, which the title series at Marvel, way back in the day, he actually was the editor-in-chief over at Image.
Oh, wow.
And okay. He actually was the editor when I very first started reading Walking Dead. And so when I saw that it was Sina that was writing this, it really interested me a lot. And so it's going to be an illustrated journey through the home of grim, grinning ghosts and other special, other spectral surprises. It's written by Sina, and it's going to have art by Egil Bartolini, who does a lot of Disney princess comics. It's going to be 72-page soft cover, and it's going to be focused on middle grade readers. So it's going to be kind of like an all ages book. But it says it will be also focused towards or geared towards each of our inner children.
Ooh, I love that.
As it revisits all of our favorite happy haunts, the ghost host, Madame Leota, the singing bus, the hitchhiking ghost, and many, many more. And what Sina says about this project is, as someone who solemnly swears to have boarded a doom buggy every Disneyland visit, I am utterly thrilled to join the 999 happy haunts with a story full of laughs, gasps, and a few surprises. The Haunted Mansion is one of the most iconic attractions in all of Disneyland, and I'm so honored to be writing a tale commemorating its 50th anniversary. So this is all a 50th anniversary kind of thing that Disney in IDW is doing for the Haunted Mansion. And it's really cool that if you follow Sina on social media, he was at Disneyland this week specifically doing research for this book.
Oh, that's awesome. I wonder if you can go like backstage and do that kind of stuff.
I'm sure.
Awesome.
I know.
Oh, man. Jealous. Thank you for bringing us that chisme. And now it's time for On My Radar. And On My Radar is going to be hosted today by Jen.
So DC's Young Animals is coming back, and this was a project that was spearheaded by Gerard Way, the lead of My Chemical Romance. And so this was actually brought to my attention by Kristen to me. And when she told me that, she told me who else was joining Gerard Way, I actually legit screamed.
She did. She totally did. She totally did.
And that's
did.
Because he's bringing aboard Mikey Way, another of the My Chemical Romance band, onto writing a comic.
Why are they not related?
It just be like that. But Gerard Way is once again writing Doom Patrol: Weight of the Worlds, and it's going to be I believe another mini series, and they are also going to do Collapser and Far Sector. And Doom Patrol is coming back July 3rd. Collapser is going to debut July 17th. And Far Sector is coming in late 2019. So this is a synopsis for them. So in Doom Patrol Weight of the Worlds, Gerard Way and the world's strangest superheroes return in an all-new series that takes them beyond the borders of time and space. Mm-hmm. The Doom Patrol will go on an epic road trip around the solar system, facing off against the unusual and bizarre, including the fanatical fitness fiends of Planet Orbius and the Marathon Eternal. Big changes are coming for these unusual heroes, including Robot Man coming to terms with his new life as a human.
What?
Yes.
That's awesome.
And Collapser, written by Mikey Way.
This one actually sounds really interesting to me.
Yeah. And Sean Simon, art by Ilias Crazies? I'm gonna imagine yes. That's how his name is said. That debuts July 17th. Is Liam James is a wannabe DJ whose life goals are almost completely dashed by his crippling anxiety, until a package arrives in the mail containing a black hole that gives him amazing powers and draws him into a cosmic conflict far beyond anything he's ever imagined. But Liam will discover that when it comes to life, love, mental health, and superhero responsibilities, there's no such thing as a quick fix, and that power comes with a cost. I'm all about that.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
It sounds really cool. And Far Sector, written by N.K. Jemisin and art by Jamal Campbell. And N.K. Jemisin is actually making their debut from being a book writer to a comic writer. And it is newly chosen Green Lantern Sojourn Joe Mullian has been protecting the city Enduring, a massive metropolis of 20 billion people, for the past 6 months. The city has maintained peace for over 500 years by stripping its citizens of their ability to feel. As a result, violent crime is virtually unheard of and murder is non-existent. But that's all about to change. This new series introduces a dizzying game of politics and philosophies as Joe discovers a brewing revolution in the city, aided and abetted by some of its more powerful citizens. DC's Young Animal continues to stretch the boundaries of creativity with experimental and genre-pushing stories.
All of them actually sound really interesting. Yeah. I mean, we've read a couple of Young Animal things for our podcast, and other than the one that we just read that completely went over my head. I mean, there are aspects of it that I enjoyed. I mean, Shade the Changing Girl, I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Then it was Eternity Girl.
We reviewed Eternity Girl for here.
Yeah. And I've also read, what else have I read by?
Mother Panic.
Mother Panic, yeah. Uh-huh. So, I mean, they're doing really amazing stuff with this imprint. And these three things, Doom Patrol, I tried to read, and I think that I probably should go back and try reading it as an entire trade, because reading the first issue and not knowing anything that was going on, it was really super like freaky to me. I was like, I have no idea what's going on.
That weird for weirdness sake. Yeah.
So I have to go back and reread. But for sure, Collapser and Far Sector sound really cool. And it's kind of interesting to have another original Green Lantern story coming from DC, because I mean, I really enjoyed Jessica Cruz and the Green Lanterns stories that we read with Bad. has, mm-hmm. and she in them. But I am really interested in learning more about Green Lanterns without having to go back and read the boring stuff.
Yeah. Not valid. Not only that, the fact that they are publishing it as a Young Animals imprint line yeah. as well. I think they're going to explore more of the sci-fi aspects, mm-hmm, especially mm-hmm. with how it sounds and everything.
Yeah.
They're definitely going to like look that into that more.
Yeah.
It seems than with the like the superhero-ness of the Green Lanterns right. themselves. Yeah. And especially considering like it is willpower an emotion or mm-hmm. a thing, because if it's a city mm-hmm. that has stripped its citizens of emotions, right. then how is Joe a Green Lantern?
Right.
Because what gives you willpower but your emotions right. and stuff like that? So
interesting.
So who is like, and above all, is Joe a new character, or is it being picked up by somebody? Uh-huh. Like, is there other stories? I'm going to have to look this up. Yeah. But it sounds very interesting yeah. and I want to know more about it.
Yeah.
So that is on my radar.
Now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen, what do you have for us today?
My Juntos y Fuertes. I don't know. What do I have today? What did I say I was going to do? Oh, yes. Sorry. There's just so much in my mind these days. Okay. So we want to share with you today another writer, just like the one who's doing Far Sector, who is making her jump from being a non-comic book writer to being a comic writer. And that person is Emily Witten. She is actually local to Washington, D.C., so not local to Los Angeles. But she is a longtime comics journalist who made the jump from writing about comics to writing them herself. And her new book, The Underfoot, which was co-written with Ben Fisher and drawn by Michelle Nguyen, came out in April, and it is going to be available in comic book stores. And it's a story called The Underfoot, The Mighty Deep, and it is all about the hamster aquatic mercenaries, known as Ham, of course, and their quest to aid their badger allies in saving their homes. So she's actually written a lot of parody and commentary webcomics, such as Deadpool Presents the Oscars. and she likes to... she has in her past written a lot of genre entertainment journalism. So it's actually interesting to me that a lot of people are coming over into the comic industry, mm-hmm. having been writers in other aspects of writing. So and especially more females coming to write. So The Underfoot, The Mighty Deep is an all ages story, and it should be available in all of your comic book shops presently.
All right, this is Sarah, and it's time for saludos. And today's saludos, we extend a salutation over to La Llorona Bakes LLC. She bakes custom cakes and conchas. Now, you can follow her on Instagram at La Llorona Bakes. She does custom cakes and conchas, and she's a self-taught home baker, vegan friendly, and you can order custom cakes and conchas via email or via text. So you can order 3 to 4 weeks in advance, and for conchas, 48 hours or about one or two weeks in advance. And she has totally awesome flavors. So she has the vanilla chocolate and strawberry, which is the original Duvaline, and
interesting
cookies and cream.
I took a moment for that
and
to click.
I know, me too.
This one is masapan. I'm all about wanting to taste the masapan one.
Yeah.
So yes, follow her on Instagram, and there it'll have a little snippet on how to order it, and you could see pictures of her custom conchas and cakes. They're super cool. One of the things that caught my eye was she has a concha with the LA Dodger logo, and it's blue. And then her family members went to Disneyland, and they took her custom Mickey and Minnie conchas with them and did a little.
When you mentioned them, or actually maybe we are following her on Instagram.
Yes.
And some of the stuff started coming up when I was looking at our feed, and I was like, oh my gosh, this stuff looks so amazing. And it's so well done artistically. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they taste because I haven't had any, but just visually they're beautiful.
So I'm thinking that we could order some custom flavors for when we maybe do giveaways at a convention. So stay tuned for that in case we ever announce that we're going to be raffling off a custom concha. So that's our saludos segment. Saludos to La Llorona Bakery. And that brings us to the end of this episode, guys. Where can they find us, Kristen?
You can find us on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
Or on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
We have a Snapchat, Comic Comadres y Comics, where we try to update with the local stuff we do around town, conventions, events, and so forth. Or you can email us at comadresycomics@gmail.com. So that has been our episode. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.